Before I actually start the formal Dharma talk, I want to share something that happened just now. I made the little joke earlier about having, you know, three things on the same ear, right? And how that was a problem. And then, we started sitting and this memory came, this very sweet memory came of my mother, who used to say to me that I had sweet little ears. Yeah. And it was like, first that was really sweet, and then I realized my mother was 5'1", okay? And I think sometimes she'd look at me and go, how did I be part of that? but then she could go, but he has little ears, so it's, yeah. And the reason I tell this story at all is part of what I'm going to be talking about tonight is the power of memory and how memories affect us so strongly. And has very directly to do with forgiveness. So, the actual, now I can actually get to the actual Dharma talk itself. and that's called The Importance of Forgiveness. And this is a topic that I keep coming back to in my own life and also in my teaching, because I think it is just so important that we learn that we need to practice forgiveness. And I want to start by reading some quotes just to put this into context. This is Desmond Tutu, who, for those of you who don't know, he was the Archbishop of South Africa, and he was very involved in the apartheid, breaking apartheid, and he also then spent a long time along with Desmond Tutu about creating, the committees that help people get over the anger and fear that had been created by all of that, what had gone on before. This is what he said. Without forgiveness, there is no future. And of course, he's speaking, he's a Christian bishop, right? So he's speaking from the Christian perspective to a certain extent. Every form of Christianity has embedded in it the idea of the importance of forgiveness. It's very common. And that's because every form of Christianity has embedded in it the Lord's Prayer, which I grew up being a good Christian boy back in the day, singing in the church choir. I know it very well, but there's a line, part of that prayer says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And that prayer was taught to the disciples the day before Jesus was crucified. So he knew what was going on. And what did he teach? What did he teach these people who had been studying with him for 3 years? He said, you have to really forgive. Because he knew what was going to happen. And he wanted to make sure they understood they had to forgive, right? And then the next day, there he is, nailed up on the cross. And he's looking down at these Roman soldiers who nailed him up there. And he says, Father, forgive them. He didn't just talk. He walked the walk, as they say. And I think it's like he was a lesson, an object lesson, made his life a lesson in forgiveness. The interesting thing, however, now I've given my Bible study part, is that forgiveness is actually very common in every sort of religious tradition you can come up with. And this is why I read a bunch of quotes. This is from the Siddur, the Jewish Book of Prayers. I forgive all those who may have hurt or aggravated me, either physically, monetarily, or emotionally, whether knowingly or unknowingly, willfully, whether accidentally or intentionally, whether in speech or in action, whether in this incarnation or another, and may no person be punished on account of me. Then from the Quran, O Lord, we have sinned against ourselves, and unless you grant us forgiveness and bestow your mercy upon us, we shall most certainly be lost. Then from the Bhagavad Gita, Hindu sacred text. O Arjuna, radiance, forgiveness, fortitude, purity, freedom from malice, absence of pride, arise in one born of the divine nature. Right at the beginning of that list is forgiveness. And then from the Theravada Buddhist chants for the ordination of a monk or nun. May the triple gem, the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, forgive us for any wrong we have done to it out of heedlessness in thought, word, or deed. So this idea of forgiveness is like deeply embedded in all spiritual traditions. It's sort of part of what's important that we have to learn to practice. Another quote from Desmond Tutu. To forgive is not just to be altruistic. It is the best form of self-interest. And we think of forgiveness as something we do for other people, but it's not just altruistic, it's the best form of self-interest. It's an act of healing. Healing ourselves, healing others, and healing our relationships with others. Now, some of you are probably at this point saying, well, what does this have to do with Buddhism? So, in the context of the Eightfold Path, forgiveness is right effort. Practicing forgiveness is right effort. It takes, basically, right effort has four aspects. Remember, right effort is the sixth step on the Eightfold Path. First step is, do whatever you can to make sure you don't create causes and conditions such that you'll go to an unwholesome place mentally. Second one is, if you find yourself in the midst of an unwholesome mind state, do whatever you can to change that. Third one is, do whatever you can to create wholesome mind states. And the fourth one is, do whatever you can when you're in a wholesome mind state to preserve it, make it grow. All of these, as you'll see over the next little bit, are directly related to practicing forgiveness. Practicing forgiveness is right effort completely. So, of course I have to read from Sharon Salzberg, the queen of these things. And she's talking about anger and aversion. In order to be released from deeply held aversion for ourselves and for others, we must be able to practice forgiveness. Forgiveness has the power to ripen forces of purity, such as love, and affirms the qualities of patience and compassion. It creates the space for renewal and a life free from bondage to the past. When we're held prisoner by our own past actions or the actions of others, our present life cannot be fully lived. The resentment, the partially experienced pain, the unwelcome inheritance we carry from the past, all function to close our hearts and thereby narrow our worlds. The intention of forgiveness meditation is not to force anything or to pretend to anything or to forget about ourselves in utter deference to the needs of others. In fact, it is our greatest compassion for ourselves that we create the conditions for an unobstructed love which can dissolve separation and relieve us of the twin burdens of lacerating guilt and perpetually unresolved outrage. It is much more difficult to forgive than not to forgive. Interesting thought. Huh? It's more difficult to forgive than not forgive. Political leaders seem to rely on this fact. She wrote this 20 years ago or 30 years ago, but anyhow, won't go there. It may be much easier to unite people with a common bond of hatred than with a shared love. It's not so easy to access that place inside us which can forgive, which can love. Remember, to be able to forgive is so deep a letting go that it is a type of dying. We must be able to say, I am not that person anymore, and you are not that person anymore. Forgiveness does not mean condoning a harmful action or denying injustice or suffering. It should never be confused with being passive towards violation or abuse. Forgiveness is an inner relinquishment of guilt or resentment, both of which are devastating to us in the end. As forgiveness grows within us, it may take us outward, any outward form. We may seek to make amends, demand justice, resolve to be treated better, or simply leave a situation behind us. So, the interesting thing about forgiveness is that really there's three distinct aspects to it. Asking for forgiveness from others, forgiving others, and forgiving ourselves. So three distinct forms that forgiveness has to take. Starting with asking for forgiveness, the first thing we have to understand about asking for forgiveness is this is a really courageous thing to do. Because basically, when you're asking someone to forgive you because you've acted or spoken or whatever, inappropriately, unkindly, harshly, whatever, it exposes you to, you're saying, I really messed up. I acted poorly. I'm not perfect at all. That's what asking for forgiveness says. And this is not easy. This takes takes courage. Your heart has to be wide open for this to be real. And there's a little poem, and this is a poem by someone named Michael Lunig that I happen to love because it expresses how open your heart should be, I suppose. When the heart is cut or cracked or broken, do not clutch it. Let the wound lie open. Let the wind from the good old sea blow in to bathe the wound with salt and let it sting. Let a stray dog lick it. Let a bird lean in the hole and sing a simple song like a tiny bell and let it ring. This is expressing the idea of you have to expose yourself when you ask for forgiveness. And what happens when we don't? What happens when we don't seek forgiveness? It basically means we're caught in an unwholesome mind state. You're averse to acknowledging our failures, our unskillful acts. You're caught in shame or remorse. Or we have shut them away completely, like, oh, I don't want to do it. You know, it's stuff we don't want to think about, right? These are all painful states of mind. You also have to accept that you can expect nothing from the other. When you ask someone for forgiveness, you can't expect anything. That's part of the process. You simply need to just ask. This is an act of accepting yourself as you are, of letting in the dark side and acknowledging it. This is how I am sometimes. Not pushing anything away. There's this great saying by the third Zen patriarch that I think sums this up. A wise man is one who is content with his own imperfections. Notice the word there is content. It's not, I'm happy with my own imperfections, but I'm content. I accept the fact that, sure, I'm not perfect. So, I keep talking about the idea that we want to practice forgiveness, right? that's what we're going to do right now. I want to actually teach you a forgiveness practice, which has these three forms. And each of these forms has a particular phrase. So it's like metta and other, the Brahma Viharas. There's a phrase you repeat over and over. So this is the particular phrase. I'm going to tell you the phrase, and then we'll go back to it. I want to also talk about it a little bit more. But the actual phrase, this is for asking for forgiveness. If I've harmed or hurt anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. If I've hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. It's really simple. It's not a big fancy thing, right? The key here is knowingly or unknowingly. Often, you know, we do things or we say things and we don't even realize that we've caused hurt until later, perhaps. Or as in the midst of us saying it, we'd sort of see someone's face sort of go, oh my God, and you went, oh, what have I just done? You know. So, but knowingly or unknowingly. So it's not like we're saying that we're malicious or bad. We're just normal people who screw up sometimes. That's all we're acknowledging. And so what I want you to do now is I'm gonna repeat this phrase out loud several times. And I want you to then, as I'm saying it out loud, say it silently to yourself. And then I'll give a, like 2 minutes or so for you just to sort of keep repeating the phrase. And I want you to pay particular attention as you're doing that to who comes to mind. Like my mother came to mind in this sweet way. Well, sometimes things will come to mind that will be probably much somewhat less than sweet in this process, but who knows. But pay attention to that, because you'll be surprised that, like, someone you hadn't thought about in 20 years, there they'll be, just like that. And then consider asking that person in person for forgiveness, and understand that they may not be at all receptive to that asking. In fact, part of what may happen, and I speak from personal experience here, sometimes you ask someone for forgiveness and they get really angry at you because it's like, wow, you know, I wasn't offended at all. Who, what kind of person do you think I am that I'd be offended? That happens instead. And so understand that asking for forgiveness is for you. It's changing your heart mind. And it may be that it doesn't make everything wonderful and beautiful with that person afterwards. It might be the opposite. And that's why I say don't expect anything. Just do it. It's your heart mind that we're trying to change. Okay, so now let's find a comfortable seated position. And as I said, I'll say this out loud 3 or 4 times. And then you can all say it silently to yourself for a couple of minutes. And just pay attention to what arises. If I've hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. If I've hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. If I have hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. If I have hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. Now keep repeating that silently to yourself. So now I'm curious if anyone would like to share what just happened as you were going through this memory lane process. And there's a mic available. And don't be shy. We're all in Sangha. We're not going to think you're bad for what you say or anything. Yeah. Go ahead, Marcia.
Two people came to mind, and both of them are not talking to me. I mean, they've cut off.
Speak, get it closer.
I'm saying two people came to mind, and both of them have cut off relations with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was someone, one is my youngest son, but yeah. So those were the main two people that I don't have any contact with anymore at this present time.
Yeah, that's part of it. Sometimes you can't ask because they're not there, they've cut off relations, they're gone, literally, physically. But it's you having that feeling in your heart that's important, the most important, the important part. Anyone else want to share anything? Oh, there's someone right here, Rex. Okay, got to hold the mic really close to your mouth.
I come from 12-step program, originally. That's where my spiritual practice began. And in that practice, you make amends. You don't ask for forgiveness. So I suppose there's a part of me from that that struggles with this a little bit, that I feel, actually, if you've done someone harm, that your approach should be apologizing for that part rather than asking for something from them. And that ultimately, the real work is to forgive yourself rather than have them to forgive you. So, it slightly clouds my ability to take this in, if you know what I mean, because I feel a little bit like, if you've already harmed someone, I think I might be not offended because I wasn't hurt, but like I was hurt, and now you're coming to me for like, because you want to be forgiven, might be my reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of what, but it's like, it's, does it affect your heart to ask for forgiveness? That's what this practice is about. And sure, sometimes you're going to get people riled, but we're taking care of this.
But it feels more of a gift to offer a sincere apology than to ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, a sincere apology and forgiveness are related, shall we say, I think. I mean, we're getting into language here. Yeah, but thank you. Yeah. Oh. One more, and we'll move on.
Well, what happened in my case was the words of the Buddha sprung into my mind when he said, he beat me, he struck me, he robbed me. In those who hold such thoughts, anger will never cease, and sorrow will follow you as surely as the wheel of the cart follows the hoof of the ox. He beat me, he struck me, he robbed me. In those who banish such thoughts, anger will cease, and happiness will follow you as surely as your shadow, which never leaves. In this world, hatred has never overcome hatred. It is only love which overcomes hatred. This is the law, eternal and unchangeable.
These are wonderful quotes from the Dhammapada. Thank you, John. Okay, so let's move on here. And part of what we're talking about here is we all have stories we tell ourselves. You know, we all have history, we all have a past, right? And these stories are, we will tell ourselves this story, and in the telling ourselves of the story, we get caught up in all the powerful emotions of that story, which often are not particularly wholesome. Fear, anger, You know, those sorts of things come very strongly sometimes. And so part of what we're trying to do here is learn how to be caught in one of those stories and not suffer. To be able to, tell yourself that story and go, and that's okay. And not okay in the sense of like, it's okay what happened that time was okay, or what I did, or what they did, or what we all said, or whatever, is okay. But that I can't keep telling myself that story because I always end up in an unwholesome mind state. And I'm trying to sort of resolve that story in some way, which is forgiving others. This is the next section. Once again, Desmond Tutu. However, when I talk about forgiveness, I mean the belief that you can come out to the other side a better person. A better person than the one being consumed by anger and hatred. Remaining in that state locks you in a state of victimhood, making you almost dependent on the perpetrator. If you can find it in yourself to forgive, then you are no longer chained to the perpetrator. I love that phrase, chained. Because we keep telling ourselves those stories over and over again. And this person might be like gone from our lives. Haven't seen them in 20 years. They might be have passed away. Who knows? They're not there in our present moment. Or maybe they are, but maybe not. But as long as we keep telling ourselves that story over and over and over again, we're chained to that person. We're chained to that story. We're caught by that. And so forgiving is an act of breaking the chains. That's what we're trying to do. Literally, we're trying to break those chains. And I'm also not saying that, you know, people haven't had really horrible things happen in their lives. Difficult, very difficult things happen in our lives. That's just part of being human. And we're not denying that for a second. It's just that reliving those stories over and over again doesn't help. It isn't wholesome in the Buddhist language. It just keeps us caught in those unwholesome mind states. And I want to note something that Sharon said. Forgiveness does not mean we condone what happened, or that we are trying to learn how to love that person, or even like that person. We just don't want to be chained anymore. Thank you very much. You know, back in my hippie days, we all believed that we should love everybody all the time. Sorry, ain't ever gonna happen if you're a human being. And we have to understand that too. But we can stop ranting about those people. Okay, we can forgive them. It's also this phrase I came across when I was preparing this talk. Forgiveness simply means that we have given up all hope of a different past. Doesn't that resonate? It's like we all think, we tell ourselves those stories, right? And it was like, oh, if I'd only said this, and then she would have said that, and then everything would have been fine, right? We try and edit the story. But you can't edit the past. I'm sorry. The past is the past. It's done. All you can do is learn not to be chained to it anymore. And that's what we're trying to do. Learn how to not be chained to those stories any longer. Okay. So here's the second forgiveness phrase. And it's sort of the mirror of the first. And so I'll say it once and then we'll practice together again. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. Once again, really simple. You know, if anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. It's like, just, that's it. I'm not saying you were okay. I'm not saying it's, I'm so happy that, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to love you now. Just, I forgive you. I'm tired of being chained to you. Okay, so let's practice now. So I'll, someone's going to sit and close your eyes. And then I'll say the phrase three or four times out loud, and then we'll once again have a couple of minutes to sit with something. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. And keep repeating that silently. So once again, if people have something they'd like to share, go ahead, Rex.
Yeah, as I said it, one good example came up, one person came up, and I felt like a tug of war in my heart. And I kept saying the phrase, and whether it was that person or no person, I felt a resolve of the tug. I felt an opening, but knowing that the tug was still there, it's like, I can't, I will. You know, it's like, I can't, I will. And it was an exercise in opening up. I felt it right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very common.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone right behind you had their hand up too.
That felt so much different from asking someone for forgiveness.
That
is an opening up. Asking someone for forgiveness seems like an imposition. It's like trying to ask someone else. It's like offloading my aversion, or offloading my guilt, or offloading my shame, rather than dealing with it myself. And actually, David White has a marvelous essay on forgiveness. It's in one of his books, and he says, you know, asking for forgiveness is hard, and sometimes you just can't do it because what you're asking someone to do is to revisit the hurt that you did to them. And that's an affront. I mean, that can be an affront. And so, just that.
Yeah, so, yeah, certainly sometimes asking for forgiveness isn't appropriate because of, like you say, of the situation with that person. But as long as you feel it in your heart that you're asking mentally, that's what's important. The actual process of physically talking to someone has to be within the context of the relationship. Yeah. One thing that Rex said sort of resonated is that there are people in our lives for whatever reason, it's like, I'm sure some of you are thinking, yeah, but I have to forgive that person. And part of what this practice is practicing intention. You know, the second step on the Eightfold Path. And you can actually change the phrase, in a sense. If you run into someone and you just like crash into them every time and you get, oh my God, there I am again. See if you can change the phrase or change the idea behind it to, I have the intention that one day I will forgive you. I'm forming the intention, which is nothing happens in our life, in how we live in the world. Nothing happens without intention. Intention must be there before any act of body or speech. So if you can acknowledge that you have the intention to one day, that's plenty to start with. Then over time you can let the intention part of that phrase go. It just gives it some space where you can, and it's very traditional. I mean, the Buddha taught in right intention, the second step on the Eightfold Path, so it's not like anything other than pure Buddhist teaching. Ah, so now we come to the most difficult one. Someone alluded to this earlier, forgiving ourselves. This is, as I said, often the most difficult thing to do. We have to accept that we have done and will do in the future unwholesome things, unskillful things. It's part of being human. But it's much easier to sort of wallow in self-blame, to feel or think of ourselves as bad or inadequate. And our culture continually encourages us to think of ourselves as broken, as not being good enough. And at the same time, because we keep thinking that we're not good enough, I'm bad, I'm whatever, however extreme that is, we're continually creating a stronger sense of a separate self. I'm this, I'm that. Notice the word I at the beginning of those phrases. And I want to talk a little bit about the culture. Because all of these stories we tell ourselves, all of the stories I've been talking about, are all centered around me, with a capital M, as a matter of fact. Yeah. These stories are like my movies, and we're always the star of the movie. You know, sometimes we're the villain, sometimes we're the hero, sometimes we're the innocent victim, whatever. But it's all me. So all of the stories are just how we create our sense of a separate self. I'm the person who this happened to, or I'm the person who did that bad thing. We're just creating a sense of a separate self over and over and over again as we tell ourselves those stories. And as I said, our culture encourages us to do this. There's a huge industry. If you've been, I don't know if you frequent bookstores like I do, but in every bookstore I've been to in the last 20, 30 years or so, there's this huge section in the bookstore called self-help books. And they all have the same premise. They're saying, you're broken, but I know how to fix you, right? And I went onto Amazon and just got the top 10 and latest top 10. This was a few while ago. I just thought I'd share some of these stories, these books, just because you get to see how weird it is. Healing your emotional self. A powerful program to help you raise your self-esteem, quiet your inner critic, and overcome your shame. You bad person, you. When am I going to be happy? How to break the emotional bad habits that make you miserable. Change your life and everyone in it. Don't you want that one, huh? Yeah. The self-esteem workbook. The 10 best ever anxiety management techniques. Okay. The success principle, trademarked. How to get from where you are to where you want to be. The single woman's sassy survival guide. Letting go and moving on. And my favorite, the universe doesn't give a flying beep about you. Really cheerful, huh? But the message in all these books are summed up in this quote from one of my teachers, Carol Wilson, who, if you never met Carol, is probably one of the more irreverent Dharma teachers. And this is her phrase that summed up how we often think about ourselves. I'm a little piece of shit that the world revolves around. Yeah? Got that one, huh? This is classic Carol Wilson, so it's like... But it's like, that's what we're going at here. And forgiving ourselves starts to break down that belief. Starts to break down this idea that that's what we are. Because we're not. And so, basically, forgiving ourselves releases us from these unwholesome self-images. We're chained to our own images of ourselves, and we're breaking them down gently, but firmly. So, third phrase. Here we go. So, the third phrase: for the ways that I have hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. So it's the sort of a combination of the first two, right, in a way. So once again, close your eyes, tune in. I will say the phrase 3 or 4 times, and then we'll see how it goes. For the ways that I have hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. For the ways that I have hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. For the ways that I have hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. For the ways that I have hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. And once again, keep repeating that, tuning into what arises. Once again, we have a little time for sharing. If you have something came up that you would like to, feel free to share with others. But this is someone behind you that risks.
So it's actually a process through this whole conversation of what came up for me that's tied to this last thing that we just did.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like for me, at least right now, that, is this on?
Yeah.
It feels that the forgiving myself is actually the first step for me. Because what I realized, kind of in reference to what you were saying about asking for forgiveness, is that if I haven't forgiven myself, then it's pretty hard for me to not have an agenda in asking for forgiveness. And that if I've really forgiven myself, then I'm not asking, yes, I'm asking for forgiveness, but it's almost like I don't need their forgiveness.
Mm.
But I'm giving them an opportunity to let go of what any resentment they might have. And so it was just a very profound feeling of like, oh, those other two can be a distraction from the root work for me of forgiving myself, because then all the other stuff can happen without some sort of subtle agenda.
Good, thank you. And there's someone over here, Rex.
I just had this image of these really thick
chains. Hold the mic really close.
Oh, I just had this image of these really thick chains like a bike lock when you talked about tethering and the chaining, and this really sharp pair of scissors just kind of like clipping those chains. And that was just the powerful image that kind of came up for me. And it felt pretty, it felt kind of expansive once they were cut.
Two thumbs up. Okay. So, in the mode of sharing, I first came across this practice, I don't know, must be 15 years ago, maybe something like that, 12 years, 15 years. I was part of a group of people, and I spoke very unskillfully, I think it would be a polite way of putting it, at one point, caused a lot of distress for other people in this group. And then for me, and I was basically freaked out for about 3 months, caught in those stories. I mean, I there was a whole set of stories that came out of the initial thing, and then the reaction to the thing, and then the reaction to the reaction. My mind was just like whirling, and I didn't know how to deal with it at all. And at this point in my life, I was going to sit for a month every year at Spirit Rock. And I had a teacher named Guy Armstrong, who was a really wonderful teacher. So I went, so 3 months after this whole incident, I went to Spirit Rock, and, you know, part of the teaching process is you have what's called the, you know, one-on-one teacher interviews. So I can't wait for the first chance I get to talk to Guy, because I'm just like boiling. I mean, there I am trying to sit 12 hours, you know, sit and practice seriously, and my mind is just like this train wreck. And I go in to talk to Guy, and I sort of blurt out this whole story, just like blah, 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 blah. Like, and he's just sort of sitting there, and he's smiling like he always did. And when I finally got to the end of the story, he said, what you need is forgiveness practice. And then right then and there, he taught me forgiveness practice. And he said, now, for one sitting period every day for this entire month, this is your practice. And so I, being a good student and trusting him a lot, that's what I did. For every one period every day, I did 45 minutes of forgiveness practice. And all three, because all three of these aspects were involved in, you know, I needed to ask for forgiveness, I had to forgive myself, I had to forgive others for how they reacted. So it was like a lot going on. And then when I got home after a month of this intensive practice, for the next 6 weeks or so, this was my practice. This is what I did. I just did forgiveness practice. And the amazing thing was, at the end of all that time, things really changed. And all that turmoil just sort of evaporated. I can't describe it any other way. It just like, it, all those stories were like, you know, and I actually spoke very directly to a few people and asked for forgiveness, and it was worked out very well, actually. But it's like, it struck me how powerful this practice was, which is why I spent so much time teaching it, because I think it's a really essential part of Buddhist teaching from the Western point of view. This is, you know, Western Buddhism has sort of combined the Buddhist teachings with psychological understanding. And this whole practice is based on that skillful combination. So I want to personally recommend, I suppose, this practice. And it's, for me, been very useful and powerful, and remains so. This is what Sharon Salzberg has to say. The sense of psychological and spiritual well-being that comes from practicing forgiveness comes directly because this practice takes us to the edge of what we can accept. This is really important. Being on the edge of challenging, wrenching, and transforming. The process of forgiveness demands courage and a continual remembering of where our deepest happiness lies. As Goethe said, our friends show us what we can do. Our enemies show us what we must do. It is indeed a process, which means that you, as you do the reflections, many conflicted emotions may arise. Shame, anger, a sense of betrayal, confusion, or doubt. Try to allow such states to arise without judging them. Recognize them as natural occurrences, and then gently return your attention to the forgiveness reflection itself. So she's pointing to this practice and mindfulness are very directly related. We have to, as we're doing this practice, be mindful of what's arising. Because if we're not, then we just get carried away by the story again. So that there has to be mindfulness blended with this practice for it to be at its most powerful. And then this is Mark Epstein. Now, for those of you who don't know who Mark Epstein is, he's a very long-time Buddhist practitioner. He's a student of Joseph Goldstein from very near the beginning of Joseph's teaching in the West, and still is. But he's also a Freudian psychotherapist. And so, the language in this particular reading has that flavor to it, but it is very much attuned to the Buddhist teachings. And he's talking about how this practice allows us to move away from grievance to something more open-hearted. The movement from grievance to gratitude is the essence of what the confluence of Buddhism and psychotherapy engenders. Yes, it is important to make sense of one's personal experiences, to face all the distressing aspects of one's history, to name the abuses and traumas and neglect, to own the shame, anger, addictive cravings, and low self-esteem that one's identity has coalesced around as a result. But it is also important to know that one does not have to be defined by these things. To hold them all lightly, the way a mother holds a baby, is to let an underlying, fundamental, and interpersonally entangled benevolence shine through. Eventually, through the peeling away of overly elaborated and often punitive self-concepts, one discovers that this underlying truth is accessible, even in the midst of everyday difficulties. This is the gate of oneness, the doorway that is nothing but open space. So think of this as the gateway to open space. That's an interesting thought, I think. And finally, a little bit of poetry, because I can't teach Dharma without reading poetry. This is from Mary Oliver's book, Evidence. And it sort of expresses what I've been trying to say. It's called Broken, Unbroken. The lonely stand in the dark corners of their hearts. I've seen them in cities and in my own neighborhood, nor could I touch them with the magic that they crave to be unbroken. Then I myself, lonely, said hello to good fortune. Someone came along and lingered, and little by little became everything that makes the difference. Oh, I wish such good luck to everyone. How beautiful it is to be unbroken. That's what this practice is about, is finding the beauty of being unbroken. So let's dedicate the merit of the practice. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere. Thank you all for your kind attention. I'll see you along the Dharma highway, as they say.